Welcome back to another episode from the Stands podcast. We are recapping the quarterfinals of the inaugural 12-team college football playoff. And what a, not a weekend, I guess a middle of the week. I know we talked before this, it's the holidays have been in the middle of the week, so it's kind of throwing everybody off. But we got a lot to talk about, couple blowouts, couple maybe close ones, but a hell of a few days, no doubt. Joined alongside Jacob and Clint, as always. Boys, how are we doing?
Doing good, man. Yeah, I don't know what day it is, but that's the beauty of this time of year. And watching these college football games, like I said, there was a couple that were close and fun to watch, and a couple that were just like, yep, this one's over pretty quick. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to talk about these. I'm interested to see y'all's point of view on some things, for sure.
Yeah, like this was a pretty eye-opening round of the playoffs here. Like some of these outcomes, and obviously we'll definitely get into it. I was like, I did not expect that. I think all three of us went 1-3 on the week, and I can honestly say the one that I did win was my least confident one. So yeah, definitely surprising, and I'm excited to hear y'all's take as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, without further ado, let's jump right into it. So the first game, New Year's Eve, Penn State taking on Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl. 31-14 was the final there. Penn State got the win. They'll be moving on to the semifinals. This one honestly was kind of my, like, I was, you know, and I think it goes back to some things we talked about. Like, I've just been cheering for Boise since, like, you know, 06-07, the blue field in the Fiesta Bowl, right? The hook and ladder, Statue of Liberty, all these things, and kind of the Cinderella team, and for them to be in this position. Maybe they could do good with, you know, with the Heisman finalists there in Ash and Janty, but came up a little bit short. I thought Penn State kind of controlled a lot of this game. So a little disappointing. I think as a fan, I just wanted like a close, exciting game. But Jacob, I'll go to you first and your take on Penn State beating Boise.
Yeah, man. 31-14. Like you said, it kind of felt never exactly close. Like you kind of said, Penn State jumped on them early, got up 14-0. Never let Boise State and Ash and Janty get into any kind of rhythm running the ball, which is exactly what they obviously wanted to do. I mean, people were saying, you know, all week that, hey, this Penn State defense, they're like the best run defense in the nation. And they basically proved that. So this is going to be a tough team for anybody to face in the playoff for the rest of the way. And Janty, I mean, they kind of stuck to it kind of like I thought they would, whether he's going for the record or it's just their game plan. Ash and Janty, they just kept giving the ball. He got 30 carries. Like I said, I thought he would get that many carries. And they just stuck to it. He averaged 3.5 yards per carry with 104 yards on the ground and no touchdowns. This Penn State team did exactly what they needed to, and they forced Boise to try to throw the ball to beat him. And I will say, Maddox Madison, he can sling it, and we've seen that throughout the year. The dude was able to make some good plays. He had over 300 yards passing and one touchdown, but between not being able to run the ball and, you know, Penn State kind of regularly kind of get to the quarterback and making him throw three picks, it just wasn't exactly ever close. And we kind of somewhat expected this with this three seed and four seed. And I really hope that this doesn't make people think that, hey, okay, these teams just never truly belong to be here. I agree. They didn't belong to be maybe the third seed, right. Which those are the automatic buys. We'll change that in coming years, I feel sure. But Boise deserved their shot, and I think they were worthy to be here. So good year for Boise all around, and I'm happy to see Penn State move on.
Yeah, what about you, Clint? I think you were pretty confident on Penn State going into that one.
No, well, I don't
maybe
know.
Not confident, but I think you picked them, right? You at least picked them to cover?
Yeah. And it was kind of a principle play, like the same thing with the first round where Penn State was favored by 9 points. And it was like, that's kind of high, but it's like, man, maybe it's for a reason. I think it was the same thing here, being favored by 11. Going in, we're like, man, this could be a really low scoring, close game. And it could have been. It's just, I think at least Vegas and whatnot had, they got their thumb on this Penn State team, who has, like we talked about, a really good defense, especially that D-line. And I think we saw after that SMU game that this is what we were worried about when it came to Boise State and running the ball. Like, are you going to be able to run through this Penn State line? And, yeah, 30 carries for 104 yards. I think Penn State's ecstatic with that. They're like, yeah, we'll take that all day, every day. Boise did bring it a little bit close. I think at one point it was like 17-14 or something like that. But like you said, after it wasn't really much of a game in that second half. Penn State pulled away, gave up a big play here or there. But like Jacob mentioned, when you can't get in rhythm and the big plays are just one-offs, and outside of that, you're running for your life, you know, on your passing plays, or you're getting stuffed at the line trying to run the ball. Yeah, that's a sign of a really, really good defense. And that's what's carried them so far this year, and it's what's gotten them this far in the playoffs. And a great win by Penn State, like Jacob said, too. Like, I'm not even going to knock Boise for getting, you know, blown out might be a strong word, but getting beat handily, because we've seen some of the quote unquote, you know, top teams and blue bloods get blown out as well. So to sit here and say that Boise State didn't belong there, I'm not going to say that either, because we've seen plenty of blowouts by teams that we all thought belonged in this playoff. So
yeah,
a great showing. That's what Boise State, that's what they had to live and die by, was running the ball, and they just could not finish it out. And that's credit to a really, really good Penn State defense. So great year by both teams, but it continues on for Penn State.
Yeah, I mean, and to Boise State's credit, I mean, obviously it's kind of, it's one of those things, you do what you're good at, which is run the ball. And look, they kept handing the ball to Jansey. I think it was one of his lowest averages, but I mean, he got the ball, what, at 28, 29, I mean, close to 30 times, I think. They obviously kept trying to feed him even to the end. So, you know, you got to stick with what got you there, but obviously a little too late there. Jacob, any more stats on Penn State Boise before we move on to the next one?
No, man, just 30 carries is what Jansey got exactly. So yep. Just wasn't able to make it work, so.
Yeah, that Penn State front, man, they're tough, and obviously we'll get to some other fronts in the Big Ten. I think have maybe been not underrated, but I guess playing their best football, you know, right now in the playoffs, which is when it matters most. So, all right, let's move on. New Year's Day, first game of the day, man. Texas, Arizona State obviously had that first round bye, winning the Big 12 Conference. 39-31 was the final. Texas got it done in overtime, beating the Sun Devils. This one wasn't really close in the beginning. I was kind of like, man, like I was hoping this was going to be close, and it wasn't. And then, and here Arizona State comes firing back, making big plays. I saw, you know how they have the graph with like win percentage. Like if you just watched that little bit, it was, I mean, a roller coaster. I mean, peaks and valleys, like the highest and the lowest from both teams. Like so many chances. I think Texas had a 99% chance to win like multiple times in the last few minutes. So it was pretty crazy back and forth game, but they were able to pull it out. Jacob, what'd you think of this game? One of the probably the most exciting games, actually two overtimes. I'm sorry. I forgot I went to the second one. So two overtimes in this one. What'd you think about this one?
Yeah, man, this is the one game, like I said, that was kind of close and kind of kept everybody watching till the very end. And I know the playoffs been dying for that. And lo and behold, it wasn't a Texas versus Georgia game. It was a Texas versus Arizona State game. So this game, I just want to say this first and foremost, I hope that this game is the reason why they still put these teams in the playoffs to get their shot. If there's a team like an Indiana in coming years, they may not deserve the 3 seed or the 4 seed, but please put them in there, 12 seed, or if we bump up 14, 16 teams, just put them in the back into the playoff and let them have their shot at least. That's just what Arizona State proved here. And yeah, this game was insanely fun to watch. I was texting y'all boys basically since the third quarter started, when you just felt the momentum change, Texas just looked so flat. Like this is what depression looks like when they kept panning to the crowd and then seeing Texas fans and stuff. And they were just completely just shocked the whole second half. And it wasn't just the fans. It was the coach. They kept panning over to Sark, and he looked like shocked, and he had no clue what to do. It was the players; they looked flat-footed. It's almost like they allowed Arizona State to come back into this game. Now, don't get me wrong; it wasn't just Texas faltering; it was Cam Scataboo freaking being a man and carrying this team.
Oh yeah,
I can't even say all the stats. He had close to 300 total all-purpose yards, and I think 3 touchdowns. He threw a touchdown, didn't he? Or no? Yeah, yes. He threw a touchdown.
Yeah, actually, that, I think that was that not their first pass touchdown or first passing touchdown or something?
It was the only one they had. It was thrown by Cam Scataboo. 42-yard pass. Kind of got
bailed
touchdown.
Out. Wasn't the greatest pass. Landed short, but the receiver came back and made a great play to catch it, not run the two guys.
Exactly. And he got 30 carries just like Jansey did, but he did 143 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. And he also had 8 receptions for 99 yards. Like, holy shit. This dude He kept saying that he felt disrespected, like he was the best running back in all of college football, and he damn sure came close to proving it. You could still put Janty or whoever you want up there, but Cam Scataboo, you got to applaud his effort here. But yeah, I just want to look at like this Texas team and say, here's a mirror. Who are y'all? Because that, there was no killer instinct in that second half. And even in like the first portion of that overtime, it was the very last play when Texas was about to lose the game in that first overtime, that fourth and whatever it was, and Quinn threw a touchdown. Once that point hit, Texas had life, and they took off from there. And it felt like the broadcast went to commercial, came back, Texas scored another touchdown. That was another thing.
Yeah,
it was like bang, bang, bang. Texas scored like 14,000 points, and Texas move on. But that's not going to work against whoever the hell they got to face next, or even if they make it to the championship game. That's just not going to work. And I don't know what to do to fix it. I think you just have to look for Quinn Ewers to carry this team. But Quinn is so inefficient at times, and then he makes amazing plays. I don't know if he could do this to bail himself out against other teams. I know, Clint, you've got definite words to say on that. But, I mean, yeah, Texas took it at two overtimes to win this game. But I'm just happy to see a really close game here in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean... First off, like you mentioned, Scataboo, like hell of a game, and not just that, he was on the sideline puking. He was sick, like for this whole game, he was ill, puking up, and he talked a lot of smack coming in this game, and he backed it up, and that's hard to do because it's easy to sit there and run your mouth, but it's a whole nother thing to go out there and actually show it after you ran your mouth, and he did against a really good defense. We've talked about this Texas defense. That's the one thing that really hasn't been all that inconsistent on that Texas team is the defense, is the offense that you're sitting there going, man, they're so good sometimes, and other times they're just dead in the water. And I think, like you said, that's what we saw here, which makes them such an intriguing team, right? Because it's like that sports car that's like one of the fastest out there, but it's always broken down in the shop. Like when it
that
when
is it, perfect. That is when, such when, a perfect thing because they've got nothing but speed. That's such a perfect thing. Go ahead.
And constantly you're like, they're just spinning their wheels, whatever the case is. But when they're humming, when everything's clicking, everything's working, they can score faster than anybody in the nation, damn near. So you're just sitting there going like, what is it? Like, why is it so inconsistent? And I can't answer that. I'm too stupid. It's just, that's what makes them kind of just so interesting to watch. And I tell you what, they gave Arizona State plenty of chances there at the end. Those missed field goals, one that missed right and the one that doinked off the left upright. I mean, they should have put this game away a little bit earlier. Kicking game killed them. And that's why we saw, the fireworks there at the end going to two overtimes. Arizona State put up a hell of a fight. And that's kind of the stuff you're looking for right there. When we talk about college football, when you talk about, chances for some of these teams to prove themselves coming out of a quote unquote smaller, lesser, less competitive conference, it go up to play one of the best teams in the nation, aka Texas, which a lot of us were like, yeah, they have a great chance to win everything and nearly beat them. That's why you love college football and you love to see it. They weren't able to pull it all the way out, but definitely tip your cap to them as well, especially Cam Scataboo, because like you said, he carried that team. And what's the head coach's name?
Sark?
Dillingham.
Dillingham.
Yeah, Dillingham. That fella, that I think he's going to be around for a long time. Maybe not Arizona State. He might get hired off somewhere, but looks like he knows what he's doing.
He signed a big extension right before the game, I think, like a 5-year. Obviously, I think he can't leave. Yeah. But
right. So, this finally, we talked about a lot of these blowouts. We actually got a really good game to watch that went down to the wire, and we got a little extra football as well going into the second overtime. So, yeah, awesome game.
Yeah, it was good to see that early on. Like, as frustrating as Scataboo, you could tell he was on the sideline. And Dillingham said like after the game, like. I guess people were asking if it was, a bad thing, how Scataboo was kind of, because I think he had kind of got after some coaches and stuff. And he's like, I'll never not let that kind of emotion like be on my team. Like, that's just, he's a competitor. And for him to do what he did at the end of the game, obviously the touchdown pass was nice, but just the running and then that catch of the sideline, that wheel route. It was impressive to see. Not a lot of times is a running back putting, maybe this year more than ever. I guess we have some pretty good running backs this year, but in a moment like that, in that big of a stage, I think he really just really shine, man. And that's probably why they gave him the MVP, which normally doesn't happen in these type of things. But I heard something pregame that his mom said that he used to take his brother's shoulder pads and he would just run into telephone poles. So that kind of like embodies him. If you look, I mean, the guy's not the fastest. Like, he's just like,
yeah. When you look at him too, you're like, I believe that. I believe he practiced against telephone poles.
Yeah. He probably used his head a couple times too.
Real quick too, that fourth down play. So was it the first overtime when Texas was like 4th and 13 mm-hmm. and they had to have a touchdown? Well, they needed a first down, but they had to have a touchdown to continue on to the next overtime, and they were able to, Texas was able to convert that touchdown mm-hmm. of their own on 4th and 13. I thought right there, I did not think that was going to happen. I was like, holy crap. I thought it was going to stay. I mean, the sidelines were going crazy. Like,
oh yeah.
Before the play, like I'm sure they thought they had it too. And again, Texas was able to just find a way to do that. That was a good game, man. I had fun watching that one.
It was. Cause like I said, Texas felt dead since the third quarter. They scored one touchdown in the second half to get this game to overtime. But that's another thing I didn't even mention. Scottaboo had 2 2-point conversions in that fourth quarter to carry the team into overtime. But yeah, like I said, it felt dead in the water all the way up to that play. And then bam, they scored. And then the broadcast went to break, come back. First play, Texas scored a touchdown. We didn't even see the snap. They needed to fix that.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, the broadcast was delayed. Like, they started just going.
Yeah, yeah. And I was hoping y'all would mention it because I don't know. I'm proud of the guy, but I wish he was still on Clemson. But Andrew Makuva kind of made the game-winning interception as well, the old Clemson transfer to Texas. So I was hoping y'all would say it so I wouldn't have to because it hurts.
Dude, that was a good play, too.
It was
a hell of a pick.
It wasn't even that bad of a throw.
Yeah.
Yep. So good for him and good insane. For Texas moving on.
Give him a lot of credit on that, man. Yep, Texas moves on to the semifinals, and they take on the winner of the next game. They're going to talk about Ohio State taking on Oregon. Ohio State, actually the lowest or the highest, or if you look at it, ranked seed coming into this round of the playoffs, taking on the number one overall seed, Oregon, coming off a bye. Big Ten champs, 41-21, Ohio State. I mean, I thought I was going to, like, I don't know, be able to watch this game and go right into the next game, and then it's 34-0 in the second quarter. I'm like, all right, I'm going to take a nap and then wake up, and hopefully the third quarter is more competitive. And obviously Oregon scores to end the first half. Then they come out the second half, and I think they go down and score again. And the sideline was kind of getting crazy. It looked like, okay, maybe we got a game. And although they held Ohio State to only like 7 points in the second half, just this one was not close. But 41-21 was the final. How surprising is this game? And I'll ask it in a few different ways, Jacob, to start. Like, obviously, the way Ohio State played last week, like, they were humming. But it was Tennessee. Now, a top 10 team, I know. But, like, it's just so hard not to imagine Ohio State playing this good. Like, I don't know if they've played a game this good in the entire year. But especially coming off that just absolute abysmal performance versus Michigan. Like, this is insane. Like, I don't. You know, maybe the Ryan Day getting fired thing, like, maybe he started those rumors to get himself fired up. I don't know. Like, he might have been like, I'm going to say this, so I really have to coach my ass off so I don't get fired. I don't know what's happened. Will Howard, all of a sudden, like, you know, should have probably been in the Heisman right now, just the way you look at it. He's played the last couple of weeks. But, yeah, what an insane game. The most shocking, though, I would say. I mean, absolutely, absolutely just dominated performance by the Buckeyes. But Jacob, I'll get your take on this, man. How surprised were you, if at all?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I was not surprised. I certainly picked Oregon to win. And I think I kind of had Oregon winning the national championship. So that kind of sucks. But this game was a first half game, and that was basically it. It was over at halftime, and I think even both teams knew it. Oregon thought that they may had a shot coming out that second half after they finished the first half with that 8-point, you know, little swing there. But it was over after, like you said, 34-0 in the second quarter, because both teams just looked like Ohio State was just going insane, and Oregon just looked flat and just they kept their jaws on the floor. They had no answer for anything. And it was Jeremiah Smith that was the main reason. I think the dude had close 200 yards and 2 touchdowns in the first half. Absolutely insane. Probably one of the best receivers we've seen in a long, long time, and Ohio State's had a shit ton of good receivers. and he's still just a freshman. So very interested to see him in the next coming game, see if any team can shut him down. But I think the most surprising thing, I 100% agree with you, JC. It was like, okay, it was Tennessee. You could, you know, chalk that up, whatever. But I think it's just the way that the Michigan game happened. And you could throw, like you said, like some of Ryan Day in there about how people were talking about him. He's got to win. But we've been doing that for a while now, so we didn't expect this. But the thing to me is just that the way that Michigan game happened, the way the team responded, like I said, not wanting to see them plant the flag on their field. They got pissed off about that. They wanted to change something. And the biggest thing is Will Howard. The dude's dropping dimes. Okay, you could say Tennessee won game, had a miracle game. Throw your hands up that say, okay, you beat me today, but you're not doing it again. And we thought that, okay, this Oregon team hasn't lost a game all year.
Right.
Will Howard's not doing that against this defense. But the dude is balling out right now. Insane right now. So
probably not a fair question, but if they don't lose to Michigan, if they beat Michigan, do they play like this honestly, the rest of the way?
Probably not. Like, honestly. And that's probably what they're still running on, is they're just pissed off about that and how that whole game went. So, I mean, they may not be winning. But, yeah, total team effort. I'd be scared if I was anybody left in this playoff having to play Ohio State right now. And I know Quinn Ewers plays then next week, so his old team, he gets to play. But, I mean, this is scary. And Ohio State's been good. Like, if you go back and look at their box scores all year, they've been a really good team, a damn good defense especially. They've barely given up any points all year. But, like, the two losses, I mean, the Oregon losses, whatever, but, like, the Michigan loss is just the one thing. And they're just going to make sure, they're going to be damn sure that they're not going to lose a national championship and lose to Michigan in the same year again. So, I mean, props to Ohio State. And like I said, I'm scared sitting in my chair.
Yeah, no doubt. And Clint, right before we get to you, another thing I noticed, which I brought up during the Tennessee game, which was so obvious, was the four-man rush. They were blitzing four, or not blitzing, they were just bringing four and getting pressure. And then there was one play, probably the last play I saw before I fell asleep. No joke, I legit fell asleep. They rushed, I think it was a third and long. They rushed three guys. Oregon had 5-0 line, and they got pressure within seconds. So it's hard to stop anybody when you're getting pressure with that just little people, and you can sit everybody back in coverage.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I was going to bring up as well, because when you look at this game and you're thinking, like, if you didn't watch it, and you say 41-21, wow, holy crap, Ohio State, or you see 34-0, which is probably the bigger number that we should be talking here, is the fact that Ohio State went 34-0 up on the number one team in the nation, undefeated team. You're thinking, okay, there must have been a couple pick sixes or like a couple fumbles deep in their own territory that Ohio State was able to just pick up and convert into easy points, whatever the case is. No, this was not that case. This was a case of Ohio State absolutely dominating and having their way on offense as well as defense against this really good Oregon Ducks team. And you bring up the defense, and especially that D line. I pulled up a stat right here. They had 8 sacks, 13 tackles for losses. Like, that's tough. And a lot of that, like you said, was only bringing four guys. And if you're able to do that, if four dudes looks like a blitz every time, that's a sign of, man, they're going to give some teams a lot of trouble. And this is the shocking game of the week to me. This is the one I was like, holy crap. Yeah, you're right. Maybe if they don't beat Michigan, or they don't lose to Michigan, they don't come out with their hair on fire like this. Because ever since, man, I mean, we poked fun at Tennessee, but maybe Tennessee isn't all that bad, and Ohio State is just that freaking good, because they put a shellacking on two teams in a row here now. And like Jacob said, man, I don't know who wants to play them right now. So absolute dominant performance. And I think we'll also see, too, kind of a bigger picture thing. The whole reseeding, like y'all talked about, let's reseed after everything's determined, and you go from there. I think we'll see that sooner than later, because again, you know, you have your undefeated number one team in the nation losing in their first game in the playoff, because they did have a tough slate. But I do like, too, that Dan Lanning came out and said he owned it. He was like, no, we lost. Like, whether we played them now or we played them, you know, 2 weeks from now, we were going to have to play them eventually. And I kind of like that response from him, too. He didn't sit there and try to make it about, like, you know, seeding or they got a bad slate or something like that. He was like, nah, man, that's a really good team. And they kicked their butts. Like, that would have happened now, would have happened 2 weeks from now. Now, we talked about this whole having a bye week thing. And is it better to have the bye week? Is it better to have the easy slate going forward? I mean, it's definitely a huge conversation, because they did look a little rusty coming out. And I didn't think they would be. I thought they would be humming a little bit better on offense and whatnot. And that was not the case. Some of that might be the bye week stuff, but also you have to tip your cap to Ohio State as well on defense, saying that they actually came out and just gave them all they can handle. So crazy game, big win for Ohio State. And like a steamroller moving forward, it looks like. So we'll see.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you look at Texas and Ohio State, Penn State was in the Big Ten championship, right? They lost to...
Yes.
So, but you just look at those two teams, right? They lost their championship games, and so no buys there. Yeah, same for Penn State. That was the point I was trying to make. All three of those teams, you know, either didn't make it or lost in the championship game and didn't have a bye, so they've been playing. So, like, maybe you're right. Maybe that is, like, the formula. But I think they asked Dan Lanning that question specifically, and he said that would just be an excuse. So he kind of left it at that and didn't go into it anymore.
That was actually a point I was going to make, too, as we were going into the Georgia game, is that seeds 1, 2, 3, and 4 all are out. Those conference champions,
crazy,
all are out. It's just wild. And some of that's just the nature of this year, I think, with a little more parity and whatnot. But I think some too is the seeding, and that's why I think you'll see some changes moving forward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I'm sure the bye week has something to do with it. Yeah, the seeding definitely as well. So I wonder how quick they'll get on it. I think there's a lot of talk going on. I don't know if they can, that's something they'll change this year or not. I'm sure they got to have some, whatever committee, price to get to another committee, and who knows. So
yeah,
we'll see. All right, moving on to the next game. This game was supposed to be played on New Year's Day, and obviously we're not a political show by any means, but I think everyone's well aware of what happened in New Orleans with the multiple people killed and then the dozens more injured. And obviously, so that game, rightfully so, was postponed another 24 hours or so, or almost 24 hours. So thoughts and prayers to the victims and families. Kind of a crazy situation happening in the world right now, but they were able to reschedule the game, still in New Orleans, still in the Superdome there, and just took place, just ended right before we're starting this recording. So we'll get right into that. Notre Dame taking on Georgia again in New Orleans. Notre Dame coming in as a 7 seed, Georgia the 2 seed. Obviously the big news there is Carson Beck's out, right? With that elbow injury. He's also declared for the NFL draft. So you got Gunnar Stockton coming in, played the second half of the conference championship game, and now he's thrust into this role, into the playoffs. So, what a game. 23-10 was the final. Irish got it done. They were the underdog, I believe, early in the week. It was a point and a half for the Bulldogs, I believe. And then...
Yes, point and a half
and then
for Georgia.
When I looked at it, I think yesterday, maybe the day prior, it got to 1 point actually towards Notre Dame. So kind of flip-flop there a little bit. But yeah, 23-10 was the final. Shout out to the Irish getting it done. Made a lot of plays. Defense, special teams, right? And offense did just enough to get it done. So really a complete performance there. Jacob, what did you make of this game? How surprised were you, if at all, of the Fighting Irish? And I know Coach Lou is probably hammered somewhere.
Yeah, Coach Lou is having a damn good time, that's for sure. But yeah, this was unexpected for me because I think we all chose, no, me and Clint chose Georgia, and JC, you chose Notre Dame here. But I was genuinely surprised because of Georgia won, only scoring 10. I understand it's Gunnar Stockton and a backup quarterback and stuff, but this is still a Georgia offense which prides themselves on offensive line play and running the ball. And they still had majority of those guys. And I thought they would still just be able to, kind of overpower this Notre Dame team and run the ball a lot better than they did. Only having 62 yards out of 29 carries. I mean, that's like a, you told me that before the game, it's ball game. I think Notre Dame will win that. Because I think Riley Leonard himself had like 80 yards on the ground and outrushed the whole Georgia team. That's something you can't have as a Bulldog. And I thought it was just a coaching game. Like, Marcus Freeman is a damn good coach, as we see, but he's 39 or 38 years old, whatever. And this is Kirby Smart, like, with all these 5 stars and stuff. And I just thought, okay, this Georgia team, they're just not going to get taken out by this. They're just going to shut down Riley Leonard throwing the ball, which they kind of did. He didn't have that well good of a night throwing the ball, only 90 yards on 15 completions. Not good at all. A lot of check downs, but they just couldn't stop the running. But Notre Dame running the ball, like I said, Leonard had 80 yards, and so the team had 154. But this Notre Dame defense, again, it's Gunnar Stockton. I get it. Like, if maybe they had Carson Beck, it would be a lot closer of a game. Who knows? We'll never be able to know because Carson Beck's off to the NFL. And it's unfortunate he got hurt. But this game, like I said, Notre Dame impressed me. I don't know what that looks like looking forward. We'll get to that in a different episode, but I certainly didn't see this coming. And like I said, Notre Dame, I know they've crushed several teams coming into this game, like all year long, besides the very first of the year, but I didn't see them doing that to Georgia. So props to the Fighting Irish and Lou Holtz.
Yeah, I think the takeaway here is maybe Carson Beck hasn't been the problem with his team on offense. And I've been a big proponent of saying I'm not a big fan of Carson Beck as far as being a quarterback. I think he's an okay quarterback. I definitely don't think he's very good or elite. But, you know, when you look at what Gunnar Stockton was able to do, and his first start is in a huge, a huge stage. Like, you can't ask much more from him, but 20 of 32, 234, and a touchdown, that kind of sounds like a Carson Beck stat to me. So maybe it's not the quarterback. Maybe it's the offense. Maybe there's something wrong there. And,
OC.
JC, I was just about to say.
I really wasn't. But you sparked that one.
No, well, I mean, you might be right. Like, because again, like, that's something that's been an issue all year. And Jacob, you mentioned how is a Georgia Bulldog team in this era, in this, you know, we talked about Georgia being the new Alabama of the SEC. How are they not able to run the football? Again, something that's not new to this game. This has kind of been an issue throughout the season, throughout a lot of the week. So it's just something that it reared its head again here. You hope to get a little more spark, and maybe they did have a little bit more spark with the backup quarterback being in, but it just wasn't enough, man. Notre Dame, really good defense. We knew that coming in. That's what's gotten them, you know, through a lot of this season outside of that NIU game. They were able to redeem themselves, and now they come out here. And again, we talked about teams that quote unquote do or don't deserve to be in this playoff. I mean, Notre Dame just beat a Georgia team that not too long ago was winning championships every other year. Yeah, but a great game by them. We talked about coaching matchups. I think, Jacob, you just mentioned the coaching situations as well, like Marcus Freeman coaches butt off, and I think he outcoached Kirby Smart here. And yeah, that's not saying that I think Kirby Smart did a bad job. It's just Notre Dame played a really good game between their ears. Like, they really smart football and were able to pull out a win against, you know, even a down Georgia team is a really good football team. So you got to tip your cap to them as well. There was a really, I think, something that was like a microcosm of how the coaching played out in this game was that towards the end of the game, when Georgia was starting to kind of rally back a little bit, they stopped Notre Dame, had a fourth down situation. There was a penalty and then another penalty, which kind of moved them back and then back up. So it was like fourth and two. Notre Dame comes out with their punt team and then subs everybody for their offense. So Georgia scrambling their guys on, and Georgia actually does a good job getting their punt, their punt team off, getting their defense on. And then they go to a hard count, and dude, they just lean right over the line. Perfect snap by the center. And it's like, you could not draw it up any better from Notre Dame. Like, that was a perfect execution of exactly what they wanted to happen. Converse the first down on a penalty. And that's just like, wow. Yeah, Notre Dame, they coached well, played well, didn't make any really big mistakes, and pulled out a W because of it. So a big win for the Fighting Irish.
I taught Marcus Freeman well, didn't I?
Clint, do you think they were actually going to go for it? I think they were. I think they were going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, shoot. I can't say no, because it's like you've been able to, you know, kind of manufacture some yardage on the runs with either Leonard or just whatever the case may be. But the fact that, I mean, they did somebody and did throw a ball, and the guy still nearly caught the ball. They had a deep pass down the left sideline on that play. So yeah, they might have actually been ready to go for it. But I think, and JC, you might know this a little bit better than I did, because you play a little more football than I did. But is it on the center in those situations to snap? It's like, if you see the guy lean, you just snap. Because I'm not exactly sure how some of these teams play that out, but it was perfect, whatever it was. It was a perfect execution.
I think it is. You don't really see it. I'd say you rarely see it in high school. Maybe now you do with how kind of advanced things is. But I would think that a good veteran center, you'd almost have to. You're not, you know, how often are you timing up? I mean, you obviously give credit to the hard counts, right? The Aaron Rodgers of the world, who just has great hard count. But yeah, I think you got to put it on the center, I think, in that situation. And for Riley to know that, like, okay, he jumped, here's the snap. Hey,
we
get a free play. So then you need everybody to keep running. But I think in that situation, right, because I think the announcers mentioned it, that one you got to give some props to the center there. So
Yeah, they were just a really good play. But you might be right that maybe they were going for it anyway.
I don't think that was the way, call. I don't think they would have just ran, you know, threw a bomb. I think that was just the
first No. Yeah.
But I do think they were committed to going for it.
Yeah. Yeah, they were at least going to throw. I don't think the run was ever going to be the call. Yeah, man, just a wild little set of events that happened right there where just absolute chaos, team, you know, whole squads running on and off the field. You see Georgia players, like, some are running on and coming off and look at the coaches like, is it me? Is it me? And they're running off and, like, they're sitting there lined up, ready to roll. And Georgia got lined up and they were, I mean, they got a little too lined up.
Yeah, snuck I know. Over that line just a tick. Good that they waited. But that was, like, one of the, now that I'm, like, thinking back too, like, it was so chaotic, but in my head, I'm like, oh, you know exactly what they're doing. So, like, it wasn't like, what is going on? They didn't have any penalties off of it. I mean, you know, Notre Dame didn't for all the stuff going on.
Right.
But what a crazy kind of situation. I thought they were going to get, which I thought, and we won't get into the substitution talk, but obviously Georgia had a chance to sub. I thought they almost waited over the ball too long because it looked like Georgia had too many men on the field, and he still waited and let the guy run off. So, I think they might have had 12 men. And if they would have let him snap it, they would have had him because, dude, that's a lot of those defensive guys probably are on the punt team, right? Like they're the, you know, they're not the gunners that's on the Notre Dame, but you know they're the protection guys or maybe a safety's taking the punts back. So it's like that chaotic swap just in your head, like, man, good for Notre Dame. And you're right, that's Marcus Freeman just out coaching him.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, did a lovely job.
That was awesome. We'll see how much more we see that next year, how many people take from that.
Maybe. Now, I do have a point I wanted to ask y'all before we go here. You know, in previous years, it's been a 4-team playoff, correct? And so that's the last committee's ranking, and they take the 1, 2, 3, and 4 seed out of that, or the four rankings. Well, obviously, this year is 12-team, and currently, the 5th-ranked team, 6th-ranked team, 7th-ranked team, and 8th-ranked team are the last 4 teams standing. What do y'all think about that?
It would have been kind of like what you see now, but not quite, because so who got the automatic buys? It was Arizona State and
Boise State.
So they got the top seeding. Yep. And they wouldn't have, in a 4-team format, they wouldn't have gotten not that high, I don't think. So they wouldn't have been one of the first teams to lose out. But I do think, I mean, like you see, Georgia just lost. This undefeated Oregon just lost, got their tails handed. So, yeah, it is. It's been a weird year. God, it's been weird.
What's your take on that, JC?
2025 is off to a crazy start.
Jeez.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel the same way. You know, that Clint does about it. Like, I don't know how much. I mean, obviously, yeah, it probably changes some things, but we'll see. I don't know, man. I don't know where we go forward with it. Like, if they're going to make changes. It is kind of interesting, though, to compare some of these what ifs, this 12-team playoff versus, I think, and I forgot who mentioned it. I think it was one, like, at least we're getting, no matter what, like, we're definitely getting the 4 best teams, probably getting the best 6, right? And then the last 6 are kind of go from there. So at least we're definitely getting those in. And I think the seeding could be maybe done a little bit better, but
yeah. So if it was,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Jacob.
I was just gonna say, if there were no automatic buys, the 4 seed would be Oregon would be 1, Georgia would be 2, Texas would be 3, 4 would be Penn State based on the last actual rankings,
right?
So
and Ohio State wouldn't have been in.
Texas is right. Ohio State wouldn't have been in. Their name wouldn't have been in. So yeah. They're hoping, I guess, Texas, Penn State would be the final, but we'll see.
This is. I think that's why you. At least in my opinion, you like the 12-team playoff, and maybe not 12, maybe like 14 or whatever right. It's going to end up being, but because you can afford the one loss, you can still be, even though you have a loss, you still might end up being the best team in the nation. And Jesus, if Ohio State don't look like they are right now, and you don't get that 14, like you just mentioned, they're not even in the 14 format. And I'd put them against anybody right now. I mean, it may not be close. Now, do they come back to earth a little bit? It's possible, but it's just, I think, because when you have a little bit more playoff games, those outlier teams, whether you call them Cinderella or teams that get hot at the right time or whatever the case is, those outlier teams, they have so many chances to either prove it or they get kicked out. And by the time you're at the championship game, you're pretty sure you've got the 2 best teams. And it's not this, we're still arguing at the championship game going, well, this team didn't even get a chance to get in the playoffs. Like, no, like we weeded that out. Like y'all mentioned too, and y'all kind of kept me in check with that, is saying like, hey, no, let these teams in. They had a great season. They had a great record. Let's find out. Because for a few of these teams, they actually did prove like, oh, we actually are legit. Even if we have one loss or whatever. No, we are one of the best teams in the nation. So yeah, I like it.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's exactly my point too. It's like, hell, fucking put it at 16 seeds next year or whatever the case is, and put a South Carolina in there. Like I said, it could be real hot, and or a Clemson or whatever the case is. Put like one of those teams in there that's sitting right there. I mean, Ole Miss, I feel sure they could have won a game or two in this if they'd have played at their top level. So I think this is, yeah, exactly perfectly how it should be, because yeah, Ohio State did not look like this a couple of weeks ago, and now they've turned it on. And like I said, I don't even know if Texas and Penn State could play them together and they would beat Ohio State right now. So, I mean, yeah, this is exactly what I was wanting. That's what I kind of wanted to ask y'all's opinion on. So I'm looking forward to move it up to 16. I'm all for more football. And like I said, let the teams decide it on the field.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think right now Ohio State could beat the New York Giants. I know people always say that's crazy, but I think this might be the time.
If Will Howard's playing like that, possibly Jeremiah Smith could be playing at the next level. That's for damn sure.
Well, and Dan Lanning said that in this.
I was about to say, yeah. And he does. Like, I was sitting there and we watched him throughout the year, right? But it's hard. Like, listen, we got day jobs, so it's hard to sit there and scrutinize every single game of every single conference, you know, week in, week out. But, right. You know, with it being the playoffs, getting a good look at, you know, these teams, that dude looks so much different than the competition around them. Like, it's a true freshman. Dude, talk about genetics lottery. Like, holy crap. Yeah.
Did you see he took a picture with Chris Carter on the sideline? Did you see that picture? Now, granted, this is no shade to Chris Carter. He's a little bit older now, and we all shrink and stuff like that. But this dude was towering over Chris Carter.
Carter ain't that old now. He ain't 80.
But that's
he shouldn't be shrinking
like,
yet.
Benefit of the doubt, like, Jeremiah Smith is an animal, dude. Like, holy shit.
Did not really. Did you see the picture of Calvin Johnson versus standing next to DK Metcalf?
Yeah.
He made DK Metcalf look like a child. Just
I don't think I've seen that one. That was recent,
bro. Like, look that up a few weeks ago. Look that one up. That one's pretty wild.
And he still makes DK look small.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, he makes DK look like legit, bro. He makes DK look small. Pretty wild.
Jesus.
Oh, man. All right, boys. Well, we got the semifinals coming up next week. I believe they are on Thursday and Friday. Yeah. So next Thursday we'll have Penn State, Notre Dame. That'll be a 7:30 kick on ESPN. And then Friday night we will have Ohio State, Texas. That will also be a 7:30 kick on ESPN. So I believe there's some NFL games. I think that start on Saturday and Sunday. Maybe that's why they're doing Thursday, Friday, I believe, as the NFL is wrapping up and getting ready for playoffs. So we will, we'll be back with you guys here in a little bit to preview both those games, but almost there, boys. Almost to the end. Just a couple more games left.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
All right, boys. Enjoy a little bit of, I guess, the last little bit of this holiday season, and we'll see you on the next one.
See you, boys, in the national championship.
See you, coach.
Go to bed, Coach Lou.